Introducing
Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Skinny Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Washington, and I am super excited today for my guests. I have with me Ms. Kendra Whitaker Shine. She is a realtor in the DMV market for the last, I want to say 15 years or so.
Close, like 12.
Okay, okay. And then she was also one of my fellow classmates in the Capital Impact Partners Equitable Development Initiative. So we're going to talk all about that and just all the exciting things that she has going on now. So first off, Kendra, how are you? How are you? What's going on?
Hey, Jess, I am doing well. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to be able to come here and chat with you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. So let's go from the beginning. What made you interested in real estate in the first place?
Oh, that's a very good question. So I started out back in, 2009. I was actually 2009. I was actually a teacher in DC public schools. And I had a pretty good job, but I started to realize that, cause I also was a teacher during the time that Chancellor Ree was there. And at that time they were kind of rifting people or firing people like left and right. And I realized I didn't have control of my future. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like my employment that I thought was secure was in the hands of someone else who just came up here one day and just started firing
people. Cleaning the house, right.
I was like, oh no. And I was watching the teachers that I grew up, you know, with being scared about whether they had a job. And my mother, who was highly qualified, was never fired, even still had that same, you know, same energy of, oh my God, what is she doing? Am I going to be next? And I didn't like that feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So my now husband that time, who was just my friend, you know how we do, friend. he introduced me to the Kiyosaki kind of way of understanding investments and understanding how you have to be in control of your future to be secure. I started to learn about real estate and investing, and these are things that, although my parents kind of knew about it, they didn't really know about it in depth. They didn't really know how or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, most people just bought a house here, bought a house there, and that was kind of it, not really diving into real estate. So that's how I came into real estate. I wanted to invest. When it came for the time for me to start investing, after I kind of learned what there was to know about investing in real estate, I realized that I had no money, I had no anything, and I couldn't get started. So I said, well, let me do the other side. Let me become a realtor and see, you know, how where that takes me. So
learn while you earn.
It's right. It's exactly. And then towards the end of 2009, I became licensed, went full time, quit my job as a teacher into real estate March 2010.
Okay, so you've seen vast changes over that time. Yes, in the honey. DC market. So tell us about your experience with those transitions.
It's very funny because when I hopped into real estate and I quit my job, my dad was like, are you crazy? Ain't nobody buying houses around here now. And I'm just like, well, if I can survive now, you know, then I'll definitely be able to survive later. So we decided to do, we were both very young, and we were both young in our mid-20s. Matter of fact, everyone asked us at our first office, they were like, are you legal? Like, we must have really had, you know, some serious baby faces. But we went into Virginia, where we knew no one. Everyone that we knew, or everything that we knew, was in DC and Maryland. But we went into Virginia because we knew that our network was going to look at us like, oh, y'all just babies. Y'all don't know what you're talking about. This is, you know, this is craziness, right? You need to go back to get your job. So we went to Virginia, got started there, and people gave us a chance because they didn't have, you know, they didn't know our background and where we came from to be able to determine that we weren't going to be able to do, you know, what we need to do. So we went to Virginia, Northern Virginia, Alexandria, started with Weikert, built ourselves up. And we survived, right? So we were able to do business. And as the market changed, we just kind of were able to stay afloat and maintain. Now, we had some personal life changes. We got married in 2015, had kids. After that, I kind of stopped. I slowed down as I began to, you know, stay home with my children. So, you know, when the market was really starting to climb back, I wasn't working quite as much. I kind of just took whatever work kind of fell into my lap. But all in all, we were working with investors the whole time. So we were able to find them deals, get them to, you know, they would take it, renovate it, and then we relist it. So in the whole, during that whole process, we would watch them. We would go into the properties, take a look at the, you know, during the phases, if they asked us our opinion about anything in design or whatever, we would let them know. And we would try to learn from them as much as we could.
Right. So how did that transition into a, I guess, a desire to want to do your own development?
Well, it was our desire from the first place, but like you can imagine, we got a little comfortable, right? We just go, oh, you know, this is working. And then, you know, just never took the first step to buy our own property or anything like that. We just kept giving it, delivering the deals to other people. Eventually it was actually 2019 where I was like, okay, enough is enough. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, do my first deal. I was able to do my first wholesale deal in 2019. And since that brought me more than I would have had as a realtor, I was like, well, why am I still selling real estate?
Look, we just had a conversation about that.
Yes. It's like, what? This doesn't make any sense. Now, by this time though, the struggle is that so many more people were into wholesaling, and it was like, it has become harder and harder to be able to find deals. Not only that, the price of real estate had increased so, appreciated so much, right, that there was very little equity left available to be able to find those type of good margins where you could do wholesale deals. And to be quite frank, a lot of owners were like, well, I'm not going to, you getting this big fat check? No, I'm not wholesaling. I'm going straight to the investor myself. They send those letters. I'll just call them myself. And I'm like, okay, but they just not going to give it to you. Right. You know, it's not like they're going to increase their price because you're not using a wholesaler or a realtor. They're just going to just give you the same price. So, but it has become more competitive, particularly in these last 3 to 5 years. In the DC area where home values have really appreciated. Because in Anacostia in the south, you know, east of the river, you could find deals less than $100,000 back then, you know, it was $50,000, $60,000 and so forth. And you can get them renovated for about $50,000 or $60,000. And then you could sell it for $200,000 or $300,000 today. You're getting a piece of junk for like $280,000, $350,000 or something like that. And the best you can hope for is a $400,000 to $425,000 or maybe $450,000 for a resale value.
Yeah. And those are the last, that's probably the last area that's relatively affordable.
Exactly. That Congress ties to Anacostia. So at this point, it's almost just like, and then people are starting to reduce the quality of their workmanship, right? Because now the margins are so thin. They didn't have enough money to actually do a quality renovation.
Right. And then just like, lumber prices and the supply chain, everything's like the price of everything changes on a daily basis. So
exactly. It just, it wasn't working. And in 2019, well, let's say 2020, as I was exploring this, particularly while we were all home, I realized I'm like, okay, so this isn't necessarily the way to go. And then a friend of ours, my husband and I, a friend of ours, you know, mentioned the RFP process. And so we were like, okay, this is interesting. They got deals. And someone else had put a little bug in our ear to say, oh, the city's got deals that you should, you know, kind of look and see what you can get. Now, what they didn't say was all the red tape and all the other stuff that comes along with it.
Yes. Yeah, so but talk about that. Cause I feel like most people, when they think about an RFP, they might think about like, you know, government contracting for services, but you were also, you were trying to get a property or like some land from the city.
Yes. So just to be clear, the RFP is the request for proposals. DC offers requests for proposals or RFPs for their properties that they own. And they'll give it to you and they'll say, okay, give me an idea. Give me a proposal. What do you think we should do with the property? Mm-hmm. And so my little team kind of gathered, it was pretty much three of us, and we kind of hired out or contracted out what we needed, like for instance, with performer help and things like that. But our little team came up with a little idea that we're like, oh, this will work. It was for school in Southeast and Malcolm X mm-hmm. Elementary. They were, you know, DC was like, well, we want this redeveloped. So we, not knowing what we didn't know, took a stab at it. You know, it was almost like our naivety
shoot, allowed shoot, us shot. To, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we didn't know that we didn't know. We just said, all right, let's just go for it. I mean, I actually assumed that it was a bunch of, you know, common known folks who didn't even really know the game as well. So mm-hmm. Turns out they were a lot more experienced than we. But as far as we got, we made it to all the way down to the end of the mm-hmm. the process. We just were not one of the four finalists.
Nice.
So I mean, we were one of the four finalists, we just were not selected. Yeah. And at the end of the day, and our, you know, we were proud of ourselves for having done it. We took mm-hmm. the step, even though we didn't secure it. We took the step. We learned a lot. We learned what we did not know. Mm-hmm. And then since then, that was awarded in like May of 2021. Ever since then, I've been trying to get a handle on what I did not know.
Right.
So, that RFP process was very, very life-changing for me mm-hmm. in the sense that it gave me a little bit of courage to step out there on a little bit of faith, to have my, you know, come up with the ideas, build the team. I learned the value of teamwork, which I kind of already knew, but I didn't really know how much I was missing, because Jason and I had been a team for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't do, he would pick up, and what he didn't do, I would pick up. But we didn't realize how much more support we could use outside of our own team. So that was a very, very good learning experience. And it was my first introduction into development on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. So building big multi-units, you know, 50 units, 100 units, and so forth. And how it could, you know, how that could work to benefit not only my family, but the community.
What, since you guys didn't win and, you know, somebody else got awarded, what was your idea for the redevelopment for that site?
So that's a good question. And we're, you know, we don't mind. Everyone pretty much presented large 100 to 200 unit apartment buildings. And we were like, well, no, that's the same old, that's what they're doing everywhere. We don't need any more of those, right? And so what we did present was an idea where it was kind of like a hybrid of home ownership, because I'm very, very big on home ownership mm-hmm. and renting. Mm-hmm. And that with a little bit of community flair, where you could have like food trucks and things like that. When it comes to the residents, they loved ours the most. When
right.
To the city buy-in, I mean, the residents, uh-huh. ours, we had the city buy-in that no one
mm-hmm.
else had.
Mm-hmm.
But the people, you know, at the end of the day, the committee who was selecting, they were like, you know, we love you guys. You guys have millennial energy. We really want to see you guys come back again and apply again. We just didn't know. We didn't feel confident that if we gave you guys this deal, you'd be able to, we could leave you alone and trust you to do it, and not have to check right. in or, you know, those things. We would have to, they didn't feel comfortable that they wouldn't have to support us more.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right. They would have had to hold our hands. So knowing what I know now, and mm-hmm. this is just, you know, a year later, knowing what I know now, they were absolutely right. We didn't have all that. We didn't know. We would have found it.
Yeah.
And we were confident that we would have found it, but, you know, we didn't know that, and we can understand why they would feel that way. So
Well, yeah, I mean, now you know, you it's good to have an innovative idea. You just got to have the team in place to execute it. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now you know better. So was that the catalyst for you guys starting your nonprofit organization?
Yes. So, well, it was two things. The first organization was Gray Crown. Gray Crown was not, is not a nonprofit, but it is a mission-driven developing company. I started that. That's when I did my first wholesale deal, because mm-hmm. I always knew that I'm not, being a realtor, haven't seen this whole transition and how this whole process. I watched, you know, investors be lipstick on a pig, mm-hmm. and they taking all the profits, and the owner's not leaving anything. And then that switched to the owner's like, you're not taking all my money, and I'm not giving my house away, and it just became a mess, right? Mm-hmm. So I started to figure, well, I felt there's a happy medium somewhere where I hope I. At the same time, I wanted owners to realize, you're right, they shouldn't take all your money. However, the next person, which is not necessarily any of your concern, but they don't have enough money to make a deal work and actually renovate the house to the condition and the standards it needs to be renovated. If they don't have enough equity to be able to get to put the money in. Right. And so what you end up with is a bunch of houses where the new owners, the buyers on the, you know, the consumers, the standard home buyers would right. buy the price, and they're like, oh my gosh, this investor screwed me over. Oh my gosh, this investor did just lipstick on pig, yada, yada. And then it was all the investors were bad. Right. Well, investors also, there's a 1% of investors look like us, right? So particularly in the larger development world.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I said there needs to be a change somewhere in there. And that's when I decided I wanted to fill that gap. Like I wanted to do more mission-driven development and, you know, investing in real estate such that it doesn't just benefit me, it benefits others. And we have a passion for rebuilding from the inside out, right? So we're not just letting other people come in to the city where we grew up.
Yeah,
and you know, taking over. No. The way we see it is, we ought to be reinvesting in mm-hmm. gentrifying our own communities.
Yeah,
and by that, we're bringing us all up together, and that's kind of like the basis and how we got into our how we wanted to start our 501c3. So more actually started because we wanted to help people with entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And Gray Crown was our development wing. Right. Well. These two decided to meet and, you know, join forces, right? So now more actually focuses on both. It focuses on entrepreneurship and home ownership because the two are together, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, everyone's physical needs has to be met first before yes. they can do anything else, right? So we yeah. want to take people from surviving to thriving. That's our mm-hmm. motto, going from surviving to thriving. Mm-hmm. Thriving. And the way we do that is to make sure our shelters taken care of and our financial needs mm-hmm. are taken care of. And we don't necessarily want people to quit their jobs, but if a side hustle can help, you know, well, a side job, I mean, business or something, you know, mm-hmm. then we're for it. And if that side business becomes a full business where you can quit your job and be your own boss, even better,
yeah. right?
So that's and when you do that, you have more time for yourself. Mental health is better. Your family is, you know, you have more time for your family. You have more time to actually live a good life, a good quality life. May not get rich.
Absolutely.
But you'll have a good quality of life.
Right. And you're building equity into something that you build as opposed to just giving all your sweat equity and your resources to somebody else's business.
Who won't pay you well enough.
Exactly.
To be able to stay in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. If it's like, if you pay people more, they wouldn't necessarily leave to go out to, you know, do their own thing. If a lot of these companies, they could afford to pay people more and they don't do it. So.
Well, it's all about the bottom line and labor or, you know, your employees are your biggest expense. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. So. Now we got to the point where we found out about Capital Impact Partners. So. How did you find out about the program and then tell people what the Equitable Development Initiative is if you've, you know, somebody listening never heard of it before?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. So all right, it's the spring of 2021, and they're like, oh, you need help. You know, we need money. Before I knew the answer, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to find some financing and get some help. So I'm Googling and I'm like, I need money, money. And I come across Capital Impact. I'm like, oh, okay, so what is this? They offer funds. Set up an appointment to speak with someone, you know, turns out that someone is Seth. And Seth tells me about, I tell him a little bit what we're trying to do, that we're hoping to give this RFP because it hadn't been awarded yet. And, you know, so forth. I tell him that, you know, we were trying to get gap funding and things like that. I think he kind of could tell that I was a little bit of a novice here.
Yeah.
Because he did tell me about he tells me about, all right, well, we're doing an equity and development initiative, the EDI program. And I'm like, oh, he said, we just had a cohort that just finished and you should talk to Kenya. I'll put you in touch with Kenya. She's no longer with the program anymore. Or with CIP anymore, but you know, he puts me in touch and I'm like, okay, I would love to be a part of this next cohort if you're going to do it. At the time, they didn't know if they were going to do it again, if they were going to have the funds. So I'm literally emailing them every week, you know, hey, how's it going? Are we going to do the program? Hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. And so I stay in contact. And then finally they tell me, you know, towards the end of the summer, I think it was July or something like that, when the application round, hey, we're going to do it. Application round's going. And I get busy, you know, get my application going. And then I got the notice that I was accepted into that program in September. Very happy, ecstatic, because I'm like, I really think this is where I want to be. Mm-hmm. I had known that the real estate kind of thing as a realtor wasn't, it was kind of, I don't know, maybe it's the fact that millennials can't stay in a job more than, you know, three
right,
to 5 years.
Right, we're getting antsy, yeah.
I knew I needed something different. So, and this felt so much more rewarding and what felt more like in line with what my purpose was and what I was called to do. So, because I'm also big on working in your purpose and where you're supposed to be so that you can make a deeper impact and still be rewarded and then not feel like working.
Yep.
So Capital Impact Equity Development Initiative is a program for emerging developers of color. So emerging, you know, those who are starting and getting to know the business, and those who are of color, you know, basically BIPOC, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color. And they basically give you training for development. So they teach you things about the pro forma, what all the parts of the capital stack look like. And it gives you kind of introductions to different departments and resources and things like construction folks and things like that. So it's just like a high level overview. It's not necessarily high level, but it's not going to give you everything you need to know, but it's a very good cover of what you need to know when it comes to developing. And I learned through that program how much more I need to learn when it comes to developing, because some of my cohort had already done their first 1, 2, 3, even 4 deals. Whereas me, I had not done a deal. I had just written, responded to an RFP. So I was very new to it, and I've been a realtor. So I'm familiar with real estate and investing, but not to this. So it was a very good program, very intense, particularly when we first got started, but with those, you know, with boot camps, but it was very good, very informative. And I would not change that experience at all. Quite frankly, virtual, our cohort happened to be virtual, worked better for me because I had a young baby. So
yeah, I would agree. It was definitely a very impactful experience, especially like you said, knowing a lot of things that you don't know. And it was good to actually go through the exercise of like going through the RFP with a fine tooth comb and really knowing about every facet that you needed, like all the different people in your development team that you need to bring together to make something come to fruition. So
yes.
That was awesome. And I'm glad I got to meet a lot of people like you.
Yeah, I know. And then the crazy thing is too, because we're alumni of the same school. So it's like, mm-hmm. we're bound to connect, you know, same high school. So we're bound yeah. to connect anyway. So that's great.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you said that, because I meant to ask you about that. So you know, fellow Banneker alum. Okay. So yeah. you told me before you were involved in like the process of the new school that got built. Mm-hmm. So what's going on with, you know, everything with that now?
So, okay. I wasn't really involved necessarily in that process. They did have committees, but a lot of times, you know, Miss Berger was keeping rightfully so, she was keeping a tight fist on that to make sure she got the things that she knew she needed. Miss Berger had been there since before I had gotten there, which was some time. See right. these grades, that's been some time. and at that time she was the PE teacher, health and PE teacher, yep. when I was there. So now she's a principal. She knew what had evolved over the past, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years. And she knew what the school needed. So I thought that was great that Ms. Berger was fighting so hard for the development of Banneker. But, you know, through that process, a lot of folks did not want. So Banneker moved from the Howard University community over to Shaw. Now, mm-hmm. it took the place of Shaw Junior High School, which is actually where I worked for my roughly four years in DC public school system. Mm-hmm. My office was in that building as well. My mother has spent 20 years working there. So that building was very dear wow. to me, because, you know, as a child, I would go up there to my mother's class mm-hmm. at Shaw. And then for it to be torn down and replaced with my high school, you know, it's just like, oh wow, this is great. But the neighbors didn't want it. Mm. The community that of Shaw, they wanted a middle school for their community. They didn't right. want this high school, you know, that kind of, I'm just to be frank, it's minority. It's 95% Black, you know. They didn't want that coming into that neighborhood, which had already been gentrified. Mm-hmm. They wanted a middle school there. So they fought, but the mayor had already promised it to Banneker. Mm-hmm. And we fought to make sure that, I mean, the alumni did testimonies. The students were very impactful. The current students at the time were in there voicing their concerns. They were, you know, protesting and letting them know, hey, you promised us this school and this is to be ours. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, for all you students out there, if you're listening, or parents of high school students, you have voices, use them, because right. they will listen. They will listen to you. And that's what happened. So Banneker is built now, that, you know, I guess they just finished their first full year there. We went to the opening ceremony. It's a beautiful campus, smaller than they would have liked, because they had to compromise.
Right.
To make the neighbors, you know, make sure the neighbors stay kind of happy, which I understood. They built it on the same footprint as Shaw, mm-hmm. which still blows my mind, because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the same shape as Shaw. it feels so different, but that's the beauty of real estate. You'll look at a piece of lot and you're like, how on earth could that fit there?
Yep.
But certainly it can.
Well, we were long overdue, because they had that old crumbly building for forever. And it was like, I don't know, jealousy, because all these other high schools were getting renovated or getting new buildings.
Big
and I'm like,
fields.
We're the, like, I'm biased, but like objectively, like, we're the best school in the city.
Why number are one we high it? School in exactly. the city, and we don't have a new school?
Exactly.
So no, we weren't feeling that at all. Speaking of which, they, you know, we'll be doing fundraisers and galas and things like that we need to, you know, support, just to make sure that the kids do get their need, because although we put our kids into a new building, they still have a lot of kids. It's still a Title I school, so a lot mm-hmm. of kids still have needs, and the right. first step, put them into a new home, right?
Yep.
So we put them into Banneker. Second step is taking care of those actual, you know, again, to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. taking care of some of those personal needs. So friends yeah. of Banneker still could, you know.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Definitely got to spread the word. I mean, like, they, when I was there, it was the first year they were doing the IB program. And so it's like, y'all, you know, the school wants to get this like global level recognition now. It's like, we got these old crumbly facilities. Like, we need mm-hmm. to have the best first class stuff so we can be on the map with,
absolutely,
you know, some other top ranked schools around the country. So I'm just glad we finally got a new building and I need to go visit.
Definitely. For sure.
All right. So what, you know, since the Capital Impact Partners Program, what have you got going on now? Any projects you care to share?
Yeah. So we're excited. Probably could use some more, use some community support too. So this is good. Now, again, our organization is passionate about homeownership because mm-hmm. we desire to close the wealth gap. Mm-hmm. And so we are looking at a property in Northeast DC that we would tear down the existing structure and build some townhouses or condos. You know, it just depends on what we can get approved with zoning. And we hope that, you know, should we be able to, we're still in negotiations, almost complete with the sellers, but we hope to be able to close that deal and I guess have new homes up by the end of 2024.
Nice. You know?
Yeah, so we'll see. It's a smaller project, but it would, you know, what is our hope is that the folks that come through our program, again, our program is very new, so we have some, you know, learning to do. However, our goal is to be able to get our participants through the program, and those who need housing would be able to, or who want to purchase a home of their own, maybe their first time home buyers, would go through us to be able to learn about what existing programs. So there, you know, there are a ton of DC programs out there, DC mm-hmm. HPAP, there's the EHAP, you know, if you're an employee of Washington, DC. For those, many folks don't know about all the programs that exist, but we also want to supplement what exists, right? So we want to give them the homeowner education, help you get financially ready. We do financial literacy classes, and then we'll partner with organizations who do the homeownership training that's actually already qualified through DC and approved, if you will, through DC. And then once you finish our homeownership track, mm-hmm. you would be able to, you know, hopefully we see that everything goes according to plan, you'll be able to get a grant towards your homeownership purchase. And that, because most of the grants and things that are already in existence are geared toward down payment assistance. Right. But it's like, what do you do when once you put everything you got into your down payment, mm-hmm. your closing costs, you know, in the 1 or 2 months that they require you to have, it's like, okay, well, how am I furnish my house, or how am I going to do all the things? Now, these things need to be slow and go, you know, slow as you go and as you can afford to do, but sometimes just a little extra support, a little grant to help you with another couple of months of reserve funds can help you. Or maybe you choose to do a repair in your house because you didn't buy a brand new renovation, you know, you find out HVAC has another, you know, I don't know, 9 months on it or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, down the road that you'll have to do that repair. So that's what our grant would do. It would help be supportive to what is already in existence. And we would help you through that. At the same time, you'd also be able to go through our entrepreneurship track where mm-hmm. you could learn to start your own business. Perhaps you're a hairstylist or you just got a cosmetology license and you want to rent a booth so that you can do hair, but you don't necessarily have your booth rent mm-hmm. because you have all your other expenses. So you could use our microloan or grant to be able to pay your booth rent for a couple of months mm-hmm. while you earn your money. And then, you know, you get on some solid footing or whatever, and then you'll be able to take your business ahead, be able to reinvest back into our program and go from there. So we're interested in doing small micro loans or micro grants, depends on what we can figure out there to be able to, you know, help people go. We're all about taking people from surviving to thriving. So closing that wealth gap, you know, that's what we're going to do. That said, although that is our first project, we are also looking for a potential rental community, mm-hmm. whether it's a renovation, or a new construction deal. We're also looking to do that. And we're looking for that to be in Northern Virginia.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's
for DC. Yeah, but either one.
That's so important because, like you said, like renting is good and like the national conversation and everything is about affordable housing, but the way to actually build wealth is to actually own. So helping people kind of shift their mindset to, all right, you know, we want to get you to get in a place where you're comfortable, but you can build up your equity, build up your down payment, whatever you need, but we want to get you to be able to own something, not only your home, but your business, like you said. And then it's so important to keep circulating the money in our community within our community.
Yes. Yes.
And then just bring those businesses, bring those services back, owned and operated by people in the community.
Yes, 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 yes. And that's how we rebuild or gentrify mm-hmm. from the inside out.
Exactly.
Right? Because we're circulating it back into our community, just like you said. So that's a passion of ours because, you know, it's great that everyone, you know, 2020, I mean, this might be controversial or not, but it's great that everyone in 2020 said, oh, let's do equity, diversity, and inclusion, EDI, you know, right? Like, oh, that's the thing to do now,
it
right?
Sounds
it sounds good. But if you're going to keep us in the same cycle of where we've been so that you can still stay up on top, which I think the government, you know, great. Okay, great. LIHTC is great. We now have funding to help try to keep development projects affordable. So the developers still getting paid their big check. Mm-hmm. The owners of these projects, you know, are still getting their rent every month and they're still building their wealth, but mm-hmm. the people on the inside, oh great, they can afford their homes, but they'll be stuck in that affordable home.
Yeah, and plus the way that LIHTC works is that once you start making more money, then your rent's gonna go up. So it's like you're still kind of in that perpetual hamster wheel that you can't get out of. So
yes, so I'm torn because, you know, the thing with development, you know, you make all the money in buy and hold deals and owning rental properties, which I definitely want to do. And I definitely think there's a place for it, definitely a need for it. But I also have a passion for making mm-hmm. sure we can push everyone forward.
Like, right.
Let's grow together. Let's do that together. I mean, really, is our life really that much richer just because we have all of the money in the marketplace, or is it richer when we all can kind of go grow together? So
yeah, you don't want to be the only person at the top.
Yeah, they will find a way to make you fall.
That's true. Yes, you want to bring everybody else with you. So definitely agree. Well, this was an awesome conversation. We could talk about this all day and catch up and stuff, but I want to shift over to the last segment of the show, which is called The Fabulous Four. I, you know, ask all the guests these same four questions. So I'll go ahead with you. So first and foremost, what is your favorite book about real estate?
You know, there have been so many. You know, I was with KW and they did, I mean, the guy who runs KW has a bunch of books, mm-hmm. but you know, I must say that I think that the one book that was probably the most impactful or life-changing was Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Me too.
It was Rich Dad, Poor Dad because mm-hmm. it changes the way you think about mm-hmm. things. And at first, this is where I made my mistake. I thought that, okay, all right, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Now I need to learn everything he did in all his classes.
Mm-hmm.
No. You don't have to do that. Everything you learn in all those classes is basically right there in that book. Take that book, let it guide you, and step out into practice. Find someone who could be a mentor, you know, and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also good to reread it because when I first read it, it's like, oh, it opened up your mind. But then after you start doing stuff, moving and shaking, you go back and read it, and it's like some things you didn't catch. Like, oh, okay, now I understand more what he's talking about.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Secondly, what advice would you give to your younger self when you were first getting started in real estate?
That's good. Two things probably I'd say. One, join a real estate team that exists. Link up with people who already are doing things. Like, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think I was arrogant, but I was maybe pigheaded or something and didn't believe that anybody wanted to help me and support me. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it was true to some extent. You know, I went into, you know, Weicker Realtors there was no diversity, right? Mm. We pretty much, there was one other woman of color in there. and she was a part-time agent. And then it was the two of us, my husband and I, and we stuck out like sore thumbs. So the one thing we did not have was somebody who wanted to mentor us, or who was available to mentor us. Those who were there full-time and, you know, were doing a lot of business, they weren't interested in mentor us, because the folks that came after us that didn't look like us had mentors just like that.
Right.
And the one who tried to come for us was actually taking advantage of us. He wanted to take advantage of our ignorance. And I was like, you're brown, bro. How you doing that? he was like, what is that? He wasn't black. He was a Latino, but it was like, how are you doing that? Like, we need to stick together. We are all we got. So at that particular time, we had to do it all by ourselves. And, you know, it was tougher. But if we had joined a team like some of the other agents, we would have had much faster success, just like they did. So.
Okay. But I do like to the point that you said at the beginning of the episode about how you wanted to go to a brand new area so that people kind of wouldn't have like a pre-existing notion about you. Like, oh, you're a teacher. What are you doing trying to do real estate now and not take you seriously? You can kind of just start over and shape your own narrative.
Yep. That's exactly what we tried to do. Well, we did. Not tried. We did. That's exactly what we did.
All right. So thirdly, what topic in real estate do you want to learn more about?
As far as development is concerned, I think I still stick with the pro forma being, you know, one of the biggest things. I want to get that thing down like in my sleep. Like it's almost like you can never learn a pro forma too much, right? Yes. So that's where I want to strengthen my skills for sure the most.
Yeah. Like I said, you can't be a developer until you know how to manipulate those numbers. For sure. Okay. And then the last one, it's not really a question, but can you please give a shout out to another lady in real estate?
So I mentioned that there was one woman there who was at Weicker when we first started. She was the only other POC Black woman in there. Her name is Beverly Tatum. I'm telling you, she has been a huge, she has made a huge impact on our development, because, you know, we were very young. We were probably like the youngest people in the office, because the average age of real estate at that probably still even today is like it's in the 50s or something like that. It's like lower 30s to 50, somewhere in that range. The average age was very, very old for, you know, most jobs. And we were like 24, 25, 26, something like that. So they didn't really want to take us seriously, but she was there. She told us what we knew. She wasn't a mentor per se. She was a part-time agent. And to this day, she is still the only person that we really still talk to regularly from that office. And, you know, it's been over a decade. So she is, and she, you know, she believed in us. She bragged on us. I mean, she helped us in so many ways. So Beverly Tatum is my shout out. I think she's a wonderful person. The way she, stays connected, it's just a wonderful thing. So
awesome. Well, yeah, shout out to Beverly. And it's so important about having, even if not like a formal mentorship, just having somebody more experienced help point you in the right direction. Yeah. Or even like when you're going through stuff and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, just somebody that you can just lean on and
vent.
Yes.
A lot of venting going on.
Like, I'm tired of always not getting, you know, this deal, or you're not winning a bid, whatever. Like, you just need somebody that can relate.
That's exactly what she was. She was a strong force and encouraged us to keep going, that we're doing a good job. Even when we didn't have much of that, because we did not have it. I mean, I'm going to say, so there, I remember I was sitting at desk duty one day, and this was like, now I had just quit my job in DC public schools teaching. And one of the women was like, thank God that Michelle Reed is in there cleaning that place up. I mean, it's a wonder if those kids ever had a notebook. Okay, so you're talking to a Banneker student, right?
Right.
We know how heavy our book bags were with books and notebooks and things like that. Don't come for us, right? And don't sit up there and act like we weren't educated in DC public schools. It's, you know, this misconception of what you're hearing on the media, that there's no one in DC doing well. We've got Rhodes Scholars. We've got Harvard, you know, graduates and full ride recipients, not just Harvard, all the Ivy Leagues. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of people doing well. Y'all hear about one or two cases of, you know, things going wrong, and you assume it's the entire system and that nobody has a notebook? Come on. I was so, you know, obviously at that moment I was furious.
Right.
But again, I was new in this world. I didn't really know. So at that time, I didn't have the comfort that I would have had now to lay that woman out. But because I also, like, she was older. She was probably upper 60s or 70s. Right. I'm just like, you have
no in Virginia.
So in Virginia. And, you know, it was just so much. And it's hard to believe that anybody would talk like that right outside of DC. Mm-hmm. But they did. So.
Well, yeah. But anyhow, how can people get in contact with you and then also give us any last words of wisdom?
Wisdom, okay. stay in touch. We would love to have your support. Our organization, as I said, MORE is very new, but we would love to have your support. We've been actually in Banneker for 5 years under MORE, but just not with the official, you know, 501c3. But we, you know, we do mentorship to the students at Banneker for their community service. They intern with us, and through interning with us, they intern at other businesses. So, you know, for instance, State Farm, we have a State Farm agent who takes our students in, and she works with them and trains them for entrepreneurship and small business. And it's not that all of our students take entrepreneurship track when they're done, but they know their options, right?
Right.
So stay in touch through checking out our website, more2build.org. So it's more2build.org. You can learn more about our organization there. We would love support if you're interested in becoming a mentor. If you're interested in going through the program, hey, you know, well, please, there's a place to apply and things like that as well. So stay in touch with us there. And I guess my wisdom, I don't know if it's wisdom or just a tip I would give with no matter what industry you're doing or what you're exploring, stick with it. And for every door that closes, you might have to go through 100 closed doors to get to that one open door. And I'm here to attest to you. I'm still going through my closed doors in many ways. But I know that one open door that I need is coming. So stick with it, keep going. The man, you know, they tell you about the man who stops short of finding gold or the black oil all the time. You know, like he stopped like a couple of feet short because he got tired. So don't get tired, just keep going.
Yes. Perseverance, especially in this industry, it's like you could, you know, people work for 10, 15 years before they become an overnight success.
Yes.
Keep pushing because it's worth it. Yeah. The money, obviously, that's out here, and the recognition is out here.
it is there. It is coming. It's my time. You know, keep just believing in yourself. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's just all hype, but it really makes a difference. Oh, I would definitely say keep feeding your mind and putting yourself in good environments where that positive energy keeps you going, because that will help you to keep going so you don't stop short of that oil and or the gold. So what you listen to matters.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much. This was great. Oh my God, this was amazing. It was good catching up with you.
Yes,
definitely got to look more into your organization. I want to get involved, especially with anything Banneker related. So but I'd love to, you know, continue keeping up with your progress, and I know we'll be doing stuff as, you know, alumni now of Capital Impact Partners.
Yes. So. We'll definitely say, I'm glad we did this. I appreciate your inviting me. It's invaluable, even for me. So
thank you, appreciate you so much. So we're gonna wrap up here, but thank you again for your time, Miss Kendra Whitaker Shine. She's amazing, and she's doing so many great things in DC and beyond. So keep up with her progress and her organization, MORE. So thank you again, and signing off here, have a good one.